just a baby. Before I could speak, I would line up all my letter blocks alphabetically. Now it's my vocation and my passion to assign every decimal numbered shelf to every decimal numbered spine. I'm
Well, welcome to the Library Show, KCAW. Today with me, I have Laura Rogers. She is the vice principal at Blatchley Middle School. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you.
Maybe you could tell a little bit about your teaching experience.
Well, I started out my work in education as a social studies and English teacher. And I kind of slowly gravitated towards teaching more social studies, even though I was an English major as an undergrad. And ironically, I think it was because I loved books so much that I had a really hard time helping kids who reading wasn't a first love for them, understand why it was so important. It was a lot easier to explain why they needed to know facts about the world and geography, which is primarily what I taught. It was a lot harder to explain why they should love a book that I already loved.
Well, how did you use books with kids in social studies classes? Did you have some kind of go-to books that you used?
Yeah, I had go-to books, but ironically, they were children's stories that were written for kids much younger than the students I was teaching. I was teaching high school, and I used children's folk tales and classic fairy tales from different parts of the world. I would read them to kids before we started a unit and ask my students to think what those stories seemed to value or what they said about the society they represented. So I didn't really have any favorite titles. I would just choose things that seemed to work.
Well, I'm going to throw in a little bit of librarian lore. There are duodecimal numbers, and I have some favorites. And 811s is poetry, and then 398.2 is traditional literature. It's one of my favorite parts of the library. I have a hard time throwing away when weeding anything from the 398.2s. And folktales stay good forever in a way because it's a representation of at least how that story was recorded at the time. Did you like to read as a kid?
I loved to read.
And can you tell me a little bit about your reading? I, as a child, had a favorite place to read, either in my bed or at an armchair in the living room, sitting upside down with my feet draped over the top of the chair. And then a really weird place that I liked to read was in my parents' car, whether it was in the garage or in the driveway or on the street. I'd lock myself in, escape from the world, and read in the car, even though I wasn't going anywhere except where the books were taking me.
Huh, that's pretty cool. But I have to say, I don't think I ever read in the car. My family, I grew up in Virginia Beach, and I used to spend summers at my grandmother's, and I used to sit on her front porch. We didn't have air conditioning, and I would sit directly in front of a fan, either stretched out on this glider she had on the porch or in a hammock. And it was a screened-in porch with, like, glass that you could close so you were a little cut off from the outside world. But I would say those were probably my favorite places to read. I have to say I think I read whenever I could get away with it, including sometimes, I'm kind of ashamed to say now, in class when I would kind of sneak a book underneath my textbook, and I'd really be – I'm sure my teachers knew.
Without naming names, was there a certain boring class or – a certain subject that you were more prone to be hiding a book?
Not really. I'd have to say it was kind of across the board, but what I would do, English, I think, was the class where I would end up reading the most because I would read ahead, and then I would pull out my own book or have it kind of hidden underneath my textbook, and I'd be reading a second book sometimes at the same time, something that really interested me.
Now, can you name some titles from either your very early childhood up into college, maybe? some of the formative books that shaped you as a reader?
Well, I loved horses, so I think I read all the Margaret Henry books. Misty of Chincoteague, which is was right north. Chincoteague's in on the Delmarva Peninsula, just north of Norfolk and Virginia Beach, where I was from. So that kind of resonated. And then there was Star, Misty's Foal, and of course, all of the Black Stallion books were awesome.
I'm going to interrupt you a second. Were you one of those children that I remember on the playground in second or third grade that pranced around as if they were a horse?
Yes, but it's supposed to be a secret. How did you know that?
I saw those children.
Oh, yeah, I was one of them.
I like to think I didn't mock or bully them. But
you did.
I'm sure I did. But now I know the horrors of bullying.
Yes.
So I'm not going to
do
that
again.
Make
fun of me
now?
No. I'll try not to neigh like a horse, too.
Well, tell me about your favorite genres.
Probably now. I like well-written historical fiction a lot. I like autobiographies and memoirs a lot. There are very few things that I don't like to read. I like nonfiction that's about things that interest me. So I would have to say I have pretty eclectic tastes.
Maybe you can talk about something that you've read recently and share it with our audience. And again, I'm going to remind people that I'm here today with Laura Rogers on the Library Show, Talking Books.
The last book that I read was called Set This House in Order. And it was just a piece of relative, I think it's probably about 5 or 6 years old. One of the things that I found that I do over time is kind of collect the titles of things I'd like to read, and then I kind of get to them when I can. And this was a book I've been looking forward to reading for a while, and I loved it. I thought it was awesome. It's actually about somebody who's schizophrenic. They have multiple personality disorder. They're not really schizophrenic, but it's sort of that individual struggle when they encounter someone else who's like them to try and help that person sort of line up their own life.
Is this fiction or nonfiction?
It is fiction.
And is there anything else you can tell me about the story? What was the title again?
It was called Set This House in Order. The one piece... The writing was really good. You really were able to be absorbed in the story because it was so well written that you didn't get distracted by anything. And the only part that was improbable that you'd have was that you'd have two multiple personality disorder sufferers together in that, because it's such a rare thing. But once you got past that, it was the way that the relationship evolved. It was so interesting to think about two people who have more than one personality trying to communicate with one another, remember what was happening, or realize what was happening when they weren't in control, that it was just interesting.
Now, did you find that any one of their characters was more compelling than all the other characters put together?
I don't think so. I think he did the author did a really good job of kind of balancing the competition and actually showing each facet and each personality as something that was just part of a whole.
Did either of the people begin to resolve their
they
multiple...
They both did, but in very different ways.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you about a book I've read. I just finished a course at Brigham Young in children's literature for my recertification, which is due May 16th. So I'm coming down on the wire on this one. I took a final just recently. I didn't pay attention to the directions. I wrote it in ink, which caused it to kind of get lost when it got to Brigham Young. But I think that's been solved. They're very friendly people with a good service. But this book, of the 70 books I had to read for the class, was the book that maybe impacted me most. They were children's literature. This is verging more on young adult literature. It's the book Chains by Laurie Hulse Anderson. It's about a girl, Isabel, who has a young sister, Ruth. They're slaves down south, and their master, their mistress, an old woman, dies, and they've been granted freedom in her will. But when her nephew comes down to the funeral, he snatches them and takes them north, and they don't have a copy of the will. And there's a portion of the book, I think I'll have you read it, where they're being carried across the water to New York City, and it causes Isabel to think of stories that her mother told her about times in Africa and coming to being brought forcefully to the New World.
Mama said that ghosts couldn't move over water. That's why kidnapped Africans got trapped in the Americas. When Papa was stolen from Guinea, he said the ancestors howled and raged and sent a thunderstorm to turn the ship back around, but it was too late. The ghost couldn't cross the water to help him, so he had to make his own way in a strange place, sometimes with an iron collar around his neck. All of Mama's people had been stolen, too, and taken to Jamaica, where she was born. Then she got sold to Rhode Island, and the ghosts of her parents couldn't follow and protect her neither. They kept moving us over the water, stealing us away from our ghosts and our ancestors who cried salty rivers into the sand. That's where Mama was now, wailing at the water's edge while her girls were pulled out of sight under white sails that cracked in the wind.
Yes, that's a great story. She and her sister get separated when one day the Lochtons are their new owners. They're royalists. It's the time of the revolution. Mm-hmm. The woman is a real horror. She's in a terrible marriage where she's abused, and she turns that abuse over to these girls. The younger daughter, Ruth, has epilepsy and suffers fits. And one day when Isabel comes home from a task, she's told that her sister Ruth is no longer there, that she's been sold away. And in a fit of anger, she yells at her mistress and then is accused of being insolent and is branded on her cheek. And what's interesting about this story is that it is set in the time of the revolution when you have the royalists and the rebels fighting each other, and the rebels are fighting for freedom, and it meant a very particular kind of freedom for a very select group of people. And she's caught in the middle trying to decide which side she's going to go to, and maybe she just has to decide that she's going to take freedom into her own hands. So a very good book, a very good book.
It sounds like it.
So would you like to talk about another book that you've brought with you today?
Well, one of my favorite books is a book called All Over But the Shoutin', and that is a nonfiction book. It's a memoir that was written by Rick Bragg, and it's set in Alabama. Rick Bragg was a newspaper reporter for the New York Times who won a Pulitzer, and he's a wonderful writer. But this was more about his mother and about her youth and his youth growing up in Alabama.
So what was particular about his situation that made for a compelling story?
I think partially rising above poverty and the getting out of an area that didn't fit. For him, Alabama didn't fit. It wasn't where he felt that he belonged. And coming from a very deprived background, to see somebody go so far was so hopeful. And so inspirational, I think. And also, his mother was such a strong person in supporting him and her other children that it just resonated with me.
Now, the title is very interesting, All Over But the Shouting. Did you have a sense by the end of the book what that title might mean?
Oh, you do, but you'll have to read it yourself.
Oh, no, a mystery. Well, I actually read maybe 3/4 of that book, and I don't know what happened that I didn't finish it. Sometimes a book slips between the covers, and then you just never get back to it. And talking about maybe an overabundance of books, which is what I'm alluding to, when one book sort of slips away, there are others within grasp so you don't move off your couch. Are you a bit of a book hoarder?
I have to confess I am. I realized it when I moved out here and I had to go through all of my things. I realized that between the books that I had at home, fortunately my husband is very handy, so as I would collect more and more books, he would just build me another bookshelf. And that was a great thing, but it was kind of a bad thing because it meant that I had almost 800 books, and that's really hard to move. So,
do you ever have the problem of figuring out whether you've read a book before or not?
Not so much. It's a little bit more when they're described to me than when I actually hold it in my hand. There's something really tactile. Like, I haven't gotten really into the whole Nook or electronic reading thing yet, because just holding a book and kind of seeing the cover and feeling the book is an important part for me of remembering what's inside of it. So there are books that I've bought that I still haven't read, and I held on to those, but I did give away a lot of things that I had read already and really loved, thought that I would read again, but I kind of cataloged them first and then donated them.
So what do you use to keep track of books?
I use Goodreads. It's pretty easy to access, and I think I actually started out with it with a little hesitation. I think somebody invited me to be a friend on Goodreads, and I accepted their invitation.
So would it, to get there, would you go to www.goodreads.com? I use it, but I'm not aware of what the address is.
Yep, that's it. And you just create a login, or you can link it to your Facebook account. And it's very for me, it's really handy because I used to buy just about every book that I thought I wanted to read. I would either order it or I'd see it in a bookstore and pick it up. And that's how I ended up with 800 of them. And some I had already given away. If I knew I was never going to read it again, I would give it away or sell it or donate it when I finished with it. But a lot of them I held on to over time. And Goodreads gave me an opportunity to kind of catalog those, know that I would be able to remember them later on down the line if I wanted to read them again or tell someone about them, and yet kind of get them off my shelf.
Oh, I kind of understand.
Yeah.
When I go to the bookstore and I see something that I might want to read, I grab it and buy it and add it to my hoard at home. My house is out of control right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little crazy, and I understand what you're doing now. I'm not sure it would feel the same satisfaction as the purchase of the book and carrying it home, but it would certainly save on my bank account.
Well, and I like lists, too, and Goodreads gives you the opportunity to create your I want to read list so that when you hear something like on National Public Radio, when they're reviewing a book or when the Pulitzers are awarded and you say, oh, I want to read all of those nominees, then you can kind of catalog them and go back and reference it later.
Does it have some of those features that maybe I use in Amazon where other people create lists for you to look at?
Well, other people make references. I don't think I've set mine up so other people can create a list for me, but I can see what my friends are reading.
And you also can review the books that you've
read.
Correct. Yeah, Goodreads is a good way to get involved in knowing about books and sharing your love for books with others. Any other books you'd like to talk to us about today?
Oh, holy cow. Okay. There are all kinds of books that I could talk to you about. But,
pick one on your list.
Probably one of the others on my list that I would say The Things They Carried.
Yes, I read that a while ago.
I've read just about everything he's written. Tim is from New England.
What is his last name?
I'm trying to remember.
And
I can't.
This
is
all right.
Why I use Goodreads, because the titles are in there and saved for me.
It's about the Vietnam War, isn't it?
It is. A lot of what he served in Vietnam, and he... most of his work is either about Vietnam and being at war, or it's about coming back home and sort of the aftermath and what war can do to kind of change your life and change your perspective. But he has Going After Cacciato, The Things They Carried, If I Die in a Combat Zone. He wrote some really wonderful books about Vietnam. I just read a biography about Vietnam, and I have to tell you, I honestly can't remember the name of it, but again, it was really good, too. And
how soon ago have you read this book, The Things They Carried? For me, I think it might have been, is it wrong for me to say 25 years ago?
No, not at all, because I taught that book when I was first getting my teaching certification, and that was 1990. So it's been out for a long time.
So if I ask you some questions, for me, if you ask me about it, I would forget everything other than I had a good impression of it. It gave me a sense of Vietnam. It did have something to do with what the people carried, the soldiers.
It did. I mean, The Things They Carried it's almost like a series of vignettes or stories about his experiences that are wrapped around the things that a soldier typically carries when he goes into the field. So each one had a particular focus that was based on one of the things that they carried.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to talk about another book. One of the things I do most poorly in my job is reader advisory. Mm-hmm. Students are always coming in and they need help in finding a book. And I can create displays, and sometimes they look at them or sometimes they don't. And three boys walked in and I knew they would need help, but at least they had some ideas in their head. Often the idea in their head is if the teacher requires a 100-page book, they want 100-page book.
Mm-hmm.
They want something that can be read quickly, that will entertain them. And one of my go-to books for that situation is a Dear Diary sort of book. I don't know if that's the name of the brand, but it's called The Journal of Scott Pendleton Collins. And it's not Vietnam, but it's World War II. And this is one of those fake diaries created to give kids a real understanding of what an experience might have been for someone. The author's a well-known African-American author, Walter Dean Myers, mm-hmm. and I sold three kids. We had enough copies. I sold three kids on that book today. So I had sort of a successful reader's advisory. Sometimes I'm sitting surrounded by books. I just read 70 books mm-hmm. by young adult and children's authors, and sometimes when I'm asked about a book, I draw a blank. So I like to talk on this show about people's experiences reading to their children. And maybe you can, first of all, introduce me to your children.
I only have one.
Oh.
My son is 24, and it's been a long time since I read to him. He lives in Juneau, so that's part of the reason why I moved to Sitka. But he... when he was a little guy, we read all kinds of things. I mean, all the little children's books when he was a little boy, Goodnight Moon and things of that nature. He would pick his own books. He liked The Nightmare Before Christmas and just there were some really wonderful children's books. I remember my husband read him the whole Lord of the Rings when he was about 8. They started reading it together, and I think between the time, they read The Hobbit first. And then they went on to The Lord of the Rings. And I think by the time they finished The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, Noah was probably 10.
You know, The Hobbit is one of the most mentioned books on this show.
Really?
And we haven't quite gotten to the point where we have like a may not mention, may not talk about this book. Because people always are so endeared by The Hobbit. And they bring different stories. Yeah. Another book that... that has been mentioned many times, that is almost on the list, is a book called Wool, and it's a science fiction story.
But I haven't read that one.
Well, I mentioned it again. It's probably had about 5 mentions. So you've read The Hobbit yourself?
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read it as a child, and I read it. I think I read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe in that series first, and then I read The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. And I'm pretty sure my mother gave me those two sets the same year. I must have been about 9 or 10. I think I was probably about 10.
So I'm going to tell a little story about reading and my fanaticism with reading. As I'm telling the story, it might give you some time to think if you have a similar story. When I lived in suburban Detroit, I lived in the mm-hmm. suburbs. We had to walk to school about a mile. The library was about a mile and a half away. And I was just a reader and a half. And by this point, I was reading a lot of adult stuff. I liked mm-hmm. Travis McGee series. I liked classics. And one day I got on my bicycle to travel to the library. Mm-hmm. And I decided to read while I was biking to the library. And I was intent in a book when... my bicycle hit the back end of a truck, and I vaulted over the handlebars, and I vaulted, I don't know, what do you call that part of the truck that comes down?
The gate?
The gate. My Adam's apple hit the gate of the truck, and I couldn't speak or breathe for a few moments, but I learned my lesson. I learned my lesson not to read and bicycle at the same time. And I think young people today have a similar sort of challenge to not be on their devices driving. Mm-hmm. So even though I didn't have a device at that time other than a book, I did have the experience of running.
A little distracted bicycle driving?
A little mm-hmm. distracted, which is a topic right now in town, distracted mm-hmm. driving. So do you have a similar sort of story about reading that you could share with our audience here?
Oh, holy cow. I don't think I have, I can't say that I have ever read while biking, but I did have a similar experience as far as getting books from the library when I was a kid. The library in Virginia Beach, my grandmother lived on 29th Street, and the library was on 21st Street, so it was only a half a mile. But I didn't have a basket on my bicycle, and I would go down and check out the maximum number of books, which was 10, and I would balance them. I had one of those banana seat bikes
with
the big handlebars like a beach cruiser, and I would balance the books on the handlebars of my bike, and then I would bike home my 7 or 8 blocks, and you'd have to bump up and down the curbs because at that time, bikes really weren't encouraged in the travel lanes with cars. So, yeah, I was on the sidewalk, and I would figure out where the cutouts were so I could go up and down onto the sidewalk without disturbing my load of books.
So not reading them, but...
did not read them, but...
navigating.
Exactly. Navigating the streets of Virginia Beach with 10 books on your handlebars is a little bit of a challenge.
So do you have any beach reading that you like?
I just read anything. Honestly, I can't, like the whole, I probably read more historical fiction in the summer that entertains me and I consider light reading. I'm not really too much into more modern stuff. It's unusual for me to read something that's set in the present. So reading Set This House in Order, something else I read recently was The Art of Racing in the Rain.
I have that one sitting at home.
It's really good. It's worth reading.
Tell me about it.
That book was really cool because it's written from the perspective of the family dog, and it's not simplistic, and it gives you a real respect for how sophisticated animals, when dogs look at you with a certain kind of sideways glance and they kind of tilt their heads and you think that they know what you're thinking or what you're saying and they understand, that's basically the premise that the author went on, and as well as the fact that they have a much deeper understanding in some respects than humans do.
I think they're finding out how deeply dogs and humans are connected.
Yes, and that's basically the premise of the book.
One of the most poignant scenes that I can ever remember in a book was a book called Lovely Bones, which
yes.
is about a girl who is murdered horrifically by a serial killer. And then she goes up to her heaven, which is a high school or a school where every day she's in school.
Mm-hmm.
And the school's set on beautiful fields that go on forever. Back on Earth, her sister is trying to solve her mm-hmm. murder. But there's a point in the book when her dog shows up in her heaven. So her dog that she left behind has died and has joined her in her heaven. And an interesting idea that author had was that everybody has their own heaven. So mm-hmm. your heaven is yours. Other people have different heavens. But I remember just sobbing. And I'm not even a dog person so much, but when that dog showed up in heaven, I guess that idea that you'll be reunited after death with the things and people that you love.
It was a great book. I read that too.
That was a very good book.
Yeah.
Yes. Mysteries and thrillers, which this sort of fit into, are one of my favorite kind of books to read. I like pulp fiction on a mystery sort of series. Yeah. And then I'm going to talk about one last thing that I've been reading. I bought a graphic novel or a comic compilation of Batgirl.
Oh, cool.
And it's several Batgirl stories strung together. And it should be appealing to young people because it's definitely set. Batgirl depends on social media. She's living a life in the city. So it's a very nice take on a new superhero or a reimagining of a superhero, which is something that's happening a lot these days. So I really enjoyed that book. So we're here today with Laura Rogers, who's the vice principal at Blatchley Middle School. This is the Library Show. And we just have a little bit of time here to talk about one or two more things before we wrap the show up. Are you a reader of poetry at all?
I read a lot of poetry when I was in college, and I enjoy lyric poetry. I'm not as good at appreciating poetry as I am of appreciating literature.
Now, I'm going to just tell the audience about something good going on in your school, which happened to be my school, too.
Mm-hmm.
Alexander Allison and Sarah Swong have been working with seventh grade students. It is a National Poetry Month, and they did the poem in your pocket project, where students were given the chance to pick out favorite poems, either write them or type them or maybe even photocopy them, and then spend the week carrying them around in their pocket, where they're challenged by people, do you have a poem in your pocket? It looks like we're running out of time here on the Library Show. Thank you so much, Laura, for being a guest, and we will post the books that you have talked about on our Facebook page. Thank you very much.
Thank you.